Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode 19 of The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Alex Stewart, and
woo-wee! I'm the old original Iron Jaw, Brass Mountain, Copper Belly, Corpse Maker from the wilds of New Orleans. Look at me, I'm the man they call Southern Death and General Desolation. Sired by a hurricane, damned by an earthquake, half-brother to the cholera, look at me! I take 19 alligators and a barrel of whiskey for breakfast when I'm in robust health, and I take a bushel of rattlesnakes when I'm ailing. I spit the everlasting rocks with my glands. Stand back and give me room. I'm the wildest son of a wildcat that lives.
Woo-wee! Bow your head and spread. Kingdom of sorrows is a-coming. Hold me down to the earth where I feel my powers are working. Ooh-wee. I'm a child. Don't let me get a start. Don't attempt to look at me with the naked eye. I scratch my head with the lightning and purr myself to sleep with the thunder. When I'm thirsty, I reach up and suck a cloud dry like a sponge. When I reach the earth hungry, famine follows in my tracks. So woo, woo, I put my hand over the sun, and everlasting night falls over the earth. I buy the peace out of the moon and hurry the seasons. I'm Harrison Onby, and the boundless vastness of the great American desert is my enclosed property. Bow your head and spread.
This might be the two most epic introductions ever created in podcast history.
Yeah, that was put my WWF intro to shame when I introduced myself.
Yeah, that I completely agree. That was earth-shattering, life-changing. All of the above. I split the everlasting rocks with my glance. I actually claim that in my own household, but my wife just rolls her eyes at me.
You split the everlasting rocks, but just make your wife roll her eyes.
But I don't come home in time for supper.
Mm-mm-mm.
Well, just from what we saw there in our episode introductions, I'm assuming that today's episode is about a whitewash bard wearing bard. Whitewash bard. Homer is whitewashed right now. Everybody sit down and watch this old fella speak.
Hey, Homer, I bet you'll have fun washing this picket fence.
The way that we should say this is today's episode is about a whitewashed barge where American can-do spirit flows as powerful as the mighty Mississippi. That's right, folks, the Mark Twain Riverboat. If you're wondering about our blustering introductions, then those are the passengers. Holy shula, buffalo, mate. Man, I'm so overwhelmed here.
I know, it's been a while since we've been back in the saddle.
I gotta dust off these chops. And folks, we really aren't reading these from scripts. I promise.
No,
that's
just
not
improvise.
Why I'm messing up.
We improvise Mark Twain off the top of our head. If I could do that, I would be do that for a lot more money than I'm making currently.
Yeah, I would probably be on the road at different theaters across the universe. I don't know if you knew this or not, but I've actually seen the future.
Oh, no, I didn't know that, but maybe I did.
The future is actually about playing small off-Broadway theaters in Alpha System 9.
Off-Broadway in Alpha System 9. Okay. I hear it's turning around. It used to be a rough neighborhood, but
their critics are actually a lot more warm and welcoming. You would be surprised.
Well, I got to take my act to Alpha 9 then. Anyway,
it's not just for anybody, Harry. Okay, so here's the thing. First, you have to learn the dialect.
Okay.
And then you really have to understand the customs before you can actually deliver their comedy.
I thought you were going to turn back to Mark Twain.
No, you never say no.
No.
Harry, first rule of improv.
Yes,
never say no.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
And if you
dialect.
Act now.
Yeah, have you heard that? You have to plus it with a yes and.
Yeah, that's why I keep going.
Of course, that's why I'm just confused, because I'm like, no, but no, that's my improv. But no.
Folks, if you're wondering about our blustering introductions, those are actually passages lifted from The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, one of our favorite books to read while sunning on the decks of the barge. We got a great show for you. What do you say we start up the engines, toot on the old smokestack, and kick the show off with the history of the Mark Twain Riverboat? From the famous 1928 Steamboat Willie cartoon, the first Mickey Mouse short, it was clear that Walt had a love affair with river steamboats. So it might not surprise you that a steamboat was part of the early concept art of Disneyland, even predating the plans to move it to Anaheim.
So having a Mississippi riverboat in the park was part of the earliest Disneyland plans?
Absolutely. The park was conceived with a backbone of a railroad and a waterway with a steamboat paddling along it.
And it's still proudly paddling today, and that is so cool.
Its first voyage on the rivers of America was way back in 1955, actually 4 days before the park opened to the public. Now, get this, it was a private party for Walt and Lillian to celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary.
Can you imagine building a park and then taking your spouse on a steamboat ride on a boat you built, which floats in a river you dug, all because you imagined it?
That's actually the epitome of manhood, in my opinion. And if
mine is carrying a handkerchief.
I feel like yours might be a little more achievable.
Doubt it. It's pretty hard to get those folds right.
And down in Texas, if you carry a handkerchief around, I hear a lot of people automatically assume you're ready to duel.
That, yeah, well, that or you're weak. It's a white flag. You're just ready to surrender, and you need to be taken out, or else you'll weaken the rest of the herd. That's the thought process in Texas.
So we are so off track on this episode.
It's just
so far,
that we haven't recorded in so long. We've just got all this garbage bottled up, so we're just putting it on tape.
So, folks, either you love this or you hate this. And
you love
as
it.
Our reviews on our iTunes account show, some people either love this or absolutely hate this.
If you don't love it, this episode will not change your mind. That's for sure.
Amen, brother. All right, so back to the story about the night of the first inaugural trip of the Mark Twain. Yeah. It's actually a pretty great story. As I said, it was Walt and Lillian's 30th anniversary, so they decided to celebrate by inviting Disney employees and personal friends of the Disney family, including people like Spencer Tracy and Ronald Reagan, to join them by celebrating on the maiden voyage of the Mark Twain riverboat. Mark Twain.
Mark Twain.
It's actually not it's not a train, it's a Twain.
They couldn't afford the rights to Mark Twain, so they just had Mark Twain.
The Mark Twain. Hi, I'm Mark Twain. I'm actually an analyst from Atlanta.
Here to work on your air conditioner.
But before guests arrive, Lillian was alerted to the fact that the riverboat was pretty filthy due to construction around the property. The event was kind of a trial run for the park, and there were some antics we'll get into later in our Golden Horseshoe Saloon episode.
That is way too much to cover today, but...
Yes.
So she and another person named Joe Fowler swept the entire Mark Twain down themselves in the hours before their party was to begin.
I love that story because it shows that the Disneys were the type of people who would still sweep the decks of the boat instead of having other hands come on and do the work for them. To me, it shows how down-to-earth the Disneys actually were.
Definitely. But I wonder if Lillian would be thrilled to be sweeping decks on her 30th anniversary.
I only imagine the conversation between her and Joe Fowler.
Yeah, but I bet she was really proud of her husband for accomplishing this park. And at that point, they still weren't sure if it was actually going to turn the company around. They were so in debt. And so it was really magical. But at the time, people didn't know for sure that Disneyland would be successful. So I can only imagine all the hopes and stuff of this night. So I'm sure Lillian is doing anything she can just to help her husband along. But
absolutely.
So we might want to also give listeners context about who Joe Fowler was.
That's actually a really good idea. And as we all know, especially on this podcast, Walt Disney was a huge visionary. But as with all visionaries, they always have help. Now, as a little context before we talk about who Joe Fowler is, we need to have a little backstory here. So, Imagineers studied riverboats thoroughly to build the Mark Twain. And believe it or not, the Mark Twain riverboat was partially inspired by the Cotton Blossom riverboat on the MGM lot built back in 1951. Disney Imagineers decided to build the Mark Twain at 3/4 scale of a real riverboat. Adding to that challenge was the fact that no one had built a working paddleboat for about half a century, so the manufacturing processes and equipment had largely disappeared.
So Walt needed a naval expert.
Exactly. And Walt hired a guy named Joe Fowler. He was a retired Navy admiral who graduated from MIT with a degree in naval architecture. He was like the perfect dude.
Sounds like a nautical man, if e'er there were one. Where have I heard the name Fowler before?
Well, from Fowler's Harbor on the Rivers of America, just across the walkway from the Haunted Mansion. It's a dry dock where the Columbia ties up every single night.
So you're probably going to make fun of me for this, but for some reason I always kind of thought Fowler's Harbor was a chicken pun. So I would get off the Haunted Mansion seriously and I'd see Fowler's Harbor and I would think that they were kind of calling me chicken. But I thought that that was kind of an invalid claim since I just rode the Haunted Mansion and I survived not becoming the 9,000th ghost. So
I actually think that's pretty funny, but to be honest, I can't make fun of you for it because I honestly... And I know this is going to sound like absolute backside of water heresy. I have never noticed that sign before. Yeah. I mean, maybe subconsciously I noticed it over there, but you're so inundated with especially the beauty of Splash Mountain as you're getting off of the Haunted Mansion that I don't really look across because it's really kind of covered up now by that what used to be a McDonald's fry station. But now I think it's like some sort of just a little gift area and snack emporium.
Well, no, and I know what you're talking about, but I remember that sign and it just kind of subconsciously registered. So I was like, Fowler, chicken. And it was either like, am I chicken or I want to eat chicken? One of those two things were what trickled down to my subconscious mind. Usually I want to eat chicken was what kind of came out of all of that. But
so they missed like a perfect opportunity. They probably should have named the place Buy a Disney Sweatshirt Harbor.
that would have really, really just made you feel like you were really in a real place and not Disneyland.
But the beauty is, would you walk out with a Disney sweatshirt?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's called marketing, bro. Why don't you go to college?
You know what? That's a great idea. Hold on really quick, folks. Let me get my degree.
So
and I'm back, and you're right, Al's right. It is marketing, and it was a good idea. I learned in college that you should listen to Al's ideas about sweatshirts.
And which university did you find this from? DeVry. Folks, today we're sponsored by Oh, great. Now Harry's getting political. We've just dated this podcast, folks. So when people listen in 2029, they're going to be like, oh, we didn't know that this was timeless until he threw that reference in.
Yeah, done. I'm out of here. I'm going to jet board away.
I love that the backside of water is so non-political that the thing that we're truly upset about is that you've actually dated this podcast instead of the fact that there's like political controversy going on out there.
I was just coming up with a university that would look weird on a resume.
I feel like the best university to put on a resume is Monsters University.
Oh, man, that would be fantastic. At the right place, that would be just the right thing to do. I'm not sure what the right place would probably Monsters, Inc. That would be an amazing way to do an interview. Like, wait, so is this Monsters, Inc.? Can I see the scare floor?
I'm willing to start in the mailroom.
Yeah, go Fear Tech.
Oh my word. This is one of those situations where we're accused of only thinking we're funny and no one else thinking we're funny. Well, it's like middle school all over again.
That was the theme of my middle school. It's me thinking I was funny and nobody else.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's get back on track.
Yeah, seriously.
So a little bit of background on old Joe. Joe Fowler was awarded several medals by the Navy for supervising American ship construction back during World War II. After 32 years in the Navy, he retired to start a construction company where he built subdivisions in Southern California. A mutual friend introduced Walt to Joe, and Walt asked if Joe wanted to supervise construction on the Rivers of America and a riverboat in his park. Joe said what any 60-year-old man would say who had retired from the military and started his own business. No. But Walt was persistent and wined and dined Joe and his wife. And I'm not sure what exactly changed Joe's mind, but eventually Joe agreed to help Disney build his park.
And they lived happily ever after, right?
Well, kind of. It worked out the way almost every happily ever after marriage does. The two disagreed very often. Walt thought Joe was overbuilding the park. Joe insisted that the ships needed a large dry dock for regular maintenance. Walt was appalled at how expensive and how much space Fowler's dock was taking up, and so he nicknamed it Joe's Ditch. Walt was stretched pretty thin financially with Disneyland at this point, and he wanted to make sure everything was built that was built, excuse me, helped contribute to the guest experience. And a big, expensive cement and wood dock built only for maintenance gave Walt a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah, and holding up a little bit, Walt usually wasn't like this. Walt wasn't like, how much money is this costing? He was usually the guy that's like, yeah, let's blow open the doors. If it's good, we don't worry about how much it costs. But Disneyland had stretched him so far financially that there are several accounts that I read that midway through, he looked over his park and saw it was all cement, nothing for guests to see, and he kind of had a panic attack because he'd been used to working in animation where you could at least see, well, the film's halfway done and it looks good so far. But when Disneyland was halfway done, it didn't look like anything. And so Walt was really worried about that they were just building concrete stuff and they wouldn't have money left over to make it magical. And so that's, I think, where all the friction was. But Walt usually, that's pretty uncharacteristic for Walt to be worried about money. That was usually what Roy was doing, and Walt was just blowing through it.
Well, and I mean, imagine knowing that you were building something and doing something that you've literally never done before on one of the largest scales you could possibly do it.
Well, nobody's done it before. And, like, he had taken out everything that he could to pay for Disneyland, including his, he borrowed against his life insurance, his home, he'd sold his vacation home. Like, people think Walt Disney was just rolling in it, but he really wasn't. During this time, his friends, there's a story of one of his doctor friends asking him for money. And he's like, this might sound a little bit funny, but I don't have any. I can't lend you anything.
Well, and it's amazing to see that that's how devoted Walt Disney was to his ideas and his properties, was that he literally didn't care about the money. And that's what I think is so hilarious about all these people who tend to criticize Disney as like this giant money cash machine.
Yeah.
When in reality, Walt Disney, the only reason why he wanted money was so he could make these things bigger, better, and more enjoyable. And I think that's one of the big reasons why he probably went against Fowler's Harbor, is because it, like you said, wasn't part of the guest experience.
Yeah.
And so why spend all of this time and all of this money on something that people aren't really going to get to enjoy? Which, I mean, if you look at it secondarily, without it, they wouldn't be able to enjoy nearly as much things like this sailing ship Columbia or the Mark Twain, because they would be in crazy disrepair all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't think Walt Disney necessarily saw that kind of big picture, because this was, I mean, the nautical world was so out of his realm of knowledge.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that I've kind of learned about Walt Disney, is he didn't really care about just getting tons of money. He was more interested in what you can do with the money that you have, rather than like just having tons in the bank account was boring to Walt.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, and later on, Walt realized the value of this space to the ships, and that this little dock could actually help add to the atmosphere of the place. And over time, Walt and Joe became really, really good friends. Joe went on to become general manager of the park for the first 10 years of its operation. Then he teamed up with Joe Potter, another World War II vet, to help build Walt Disney World.
So Joe Fowler, in summation, was a World War II vet, a contractor, and a major player in the construction of Disneyland and Disney World. He's definitely a who's who of Disney. He's a Disney legend, and it sounds like he had an amazing life.
Absolutely. So next time you're at the park, folks, give a little salute over to Fowler's Harbor.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny how Walt sought him out. Walt had this sense for people, as we kind of know now on this show.
Yeah.
And Joe was the absolute best man for Walt's job. When Disneyland opened, the Mark Twain riverboat was a huge hit. Such a hit, in fact, that people crowded onto it. And I mean like crazy crowded onto it. One day, people crowded on the left side of the boat.
Starboard.
Oh, sorry, starboard. Actually, wait, I think that might be
Star-Lord.
The port. Star on the Star-Lord side of the boat.
Yeah,
so
I get
I'm
that
pretty
really
sure it's
confused.
The port.
It's port. Wow. Oh, wow. My life has been a lie.
And not just for that reason, Harry.
My real name
I don't know if anybody's
Alfonso.
Ever told you this, but you're actually from Alpha Sector 9.
Oh,
was that the name of the planet from before?
I think it was A9, yeah.
A9, something like that.
Isn't that a paper size? I think that's where that came from in your subconscious. pretty sure.
I'm really just into stationery as of late.
Al loves A7. He loves A4. Don't get him started on A3. That thing's proportions are ugly. He'll tell you all about it. But
and good luck trying to mail something in that shape.
Oof, yeah. Anyway.
So anyway, people crowded onto the left side of the boat to see the Native American camp on Tom Sawyer Island. When they realized that their feet were wet.
I'm sure nobody's listening to this podcast in the middle of me like, you know what, I hope they talk about paper right now. I hope not.
I can't wait to hear what kind of paper they use.
Yes. You know, we'll get one review being like, they started talking about paper and then stopped. 1 star. From Paper Guy.
Paper lover.
Yeah. So their feet were wet when they crowded to see the Native American camp on Tom Sawyer Island?
Yes, actually that happened. So the weight of the crowd on that one side of the boat caused the boat to lean so far that it actually started flooding the deck.
Wow.
Then a short time later, cast members let so many people crowd onto the boat that it came loose from the track and actually got stuck into the mud on one of the banks. After that, the park put a 300-person limit on the riverboat. But aside from a few refurbishments here and there, the ship has actually sailed successfully ever since then.
All thanks to Joe Fowler's shipbuilding prowess.
I think that's actually going to be my next toast.
What, Joe Fowler's shipbuilding prowess?
To Joe Fowler's shipbuilding prowess.
Nobody's going to have a clue what you're talking about, and that's as it should be with any distinguished toast. So now that Alex has filled you in on the history of the boat, I'm going to give you some present-day tips for the next time you enjoy your ride on this historic attraction. So first off, if you ask a dockside cast member nicely, you can captain the mighty barge. Sure, you might have to wait for it, but what the heck? You can get access to the wheelhouse, which was one of Walt's favorite parts in the park and a place he frequently visited. And friends, from the wheelhouse, you'll get incredible views of the park. Maybe if you ask extra politely, they'll let you use the whistle and bell system. And when you're finished, don't forget to sign the guest book. Disneyland keeps a guest book of everyone who visits the wheelhouse.
You might even brush shoulders with some Club 33 members.
Whoa.
One of the perks of Club 33 membership is that you have access to the wheelhouse of the Mark Twain Riverboat, worth 10 grand. You can listen to our Club 33 episode if you want to learn more about what Club 33 is all about and the date specifically that Harrison and I both became Club 33 members.
Definitely. But if you can't make
it into
the
wheelhouse... That's a lie. We really aren't. Sorry. We really aren't Club 33 members, because I know that we'll get people being like, are you guys really Club 33? No, we're not.
You're not. I borrowed against my life insurance, sold my car, and I did it. I did it. I don't live anywhere near the park, but I'm a member.
I borrowed against my life insurance, sold my car, put a lien against my house, simply just to build a giant concrete slab to look over so I could know what Walt Disney felt like when he was looking over Disneyland for the first time.
That's fantastic. You really did some deep research for this episode. Way to
go,
bud.
Dude, it was totally worth getting that perspective.
I bet. I could really hear it in your voice that it wasn't just something that you were saying. You'd lived it.
I felt it. Sorry to derail you. Go ahead.
So if you can't make it into the wheelhouse or you don't want to wait, there are still plenty of things to enjoy on this beautiful vessel. One of the best places to take in views from the park is on her prow, or the front area of the boat. You have to board early if you want a seat in one of the chairs because they fill up quickly. If the prow is too crowded, you can make your way up the steps and visit the charming wood-paneled saloon if you want to find a nice shady spot to take a load off. Years ago, Walt hosted private parties on the Mark Twain, and music from the live bands would fill this saloon. So see if you can explore around the riverboat and find the stage where the bands used to play.
I would give my life insurance, my car, and put a lien on my house if I could actually get a way to have a boat party with Walt.
Well, and I was thinking about this. You can imagine Disneyland like that. Like, well, that's kind of Walt's like love letter to the public. Just here's my imagination, and here's what I'm thinking of, and this is the best I can think of. Enjoy it. So Disneyland is very much in Walt's spirit. So with a little imagination, you can pretend you really are on a boat party with Walt. It's kind of cheesy, but Alex, my friend, if you still have time, the third level of the boat is pretty neat too. The third level has a shaded salon area with red tufted seats. you can take a load off and enjoy your surroundings while the boat paddles around the rivers of America. So folks, next time you're in the park, be sure to check out this historic attraction. You might find that, like Walt himself, this beautiful boat fuels your imagination and delights your inner child.
And that's our episode of the Mark Twain Riverboat, folks. We appreciate you listening to our podcast. We appreciate your patience as we spend some time writing some new episodes and getting some new content out there for you. And we really sincerely and genuinely believe that our listeners are the greatest listeners in the entire internet realm, because they don't have to know, but they're actually already listening because their technology far surpasses ours.
Oh,
anyway, that was day one information about A1, A9, A1. That is definitely first day stuff about A1 steak sauce.
Yeah.
I gush because I love our listeners. I do love steak sauce almost as much as our listeners. And we love hearing from you guys on any of our social media outlets. The Backside of Water on Instagram, Backside of Water on Twitter. And we really love reading through reviews that you guys have given us on our iTunes channel. Now, as we record here, we are actually in the process of jumping over to Stitcher Radio as well, so we can get our Android listeners on board so they don't have to go through our website to listen to that. So stay tuned, Android listeners, because soon enough you won't have to go to our website. You'll be able to check us out on Stitcher. So, like I said, if you can, just shoot us a review over on iTunes. And if you want to talk less publicly to us, you can always email us your favorite memories about the Mark Twain Riverboat over at thebacksideofwaterpodcast@gmail.com. So as you exit, be sure to watch your head and watch your step.
And this is a little off script here, but we also started another podcast called Disney.
Yes.
We have scheduling issues. We're in different time zones and stuff, so sometimes the Backside of Water just doesn't get done as quickly as we'd like. So we decided that we would tap into our reserves about what we know about Disney in general, whether it's the parks or the movies or anything really, and just give little short episodes about what we know, just kind of off the top of our heads, so that you can enjoy that. And if you're like us, you really love beefing up your Disney knowledge, so you can do that on the go now with our sister podcast, Did You Know Disney? So, if
great
you like
plug,
us,
Harry. Great
well,
plug.
Well, did you know Disney also did great plugs? That's the first episode. Actually, the first episode's up now, but it's about Walt Disney. This plug just gets better and better.
It is true. Well, and that's the thing that I think that we also kind of designed this for, is so you can get your Disney trivia fix between episodes of The Backside of Water.
Yeah.
So my child is entering into the room right now. So if you hear a "Hello, Daddy," then you can know that's from my child.
So as he misses his step and hits his head and watches his language,
that's the one. All right, folks. We'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in.